proceed to last case of the morning. United States versus Xiao Mai, I don't know. And you're Mr. Freebus?
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors, Counsel. May it please the Court, my name is Dave Freebus. I'm a third-year student at the University of Wisconsin Law School, and I represent the appellant, Xiao Mai. Also appearing is Attorney Wendy Paul on behalf of Mr. Mai. The chief issue before this court is, chief issue Mr. Mai brings on appeal is the district court's calculation of Mr. May's intended loss. I guess just to cut right to it, Mr. Mai is challenging the method that the district court used to calculate his intended loss.
You know, you seem to agree that Judge Guzman properly could have calculated the loss based on either the average of the actual losses on each card, or alternatively, based on the total known limits of the credit card numbers. So why, in principle, could he not also calculate the loss based on the average credit card limit, even if the actual limits on all the cards aren't known to us?
Well, I think in the first case where you use the average actual loss, what you're doing there is you're going through a reasoning process where you say we have a known loss and a known instances of conduct. And then because the defendant is apprehended before he's able to complete his offense, you need to infer what his conduct would have been had it not been apprehended. And so in that case, you're making an inference relating to conduct, and that you're using the known amount of loss to as a fixed known, basically known fact, to drive the intended loss calculation. In the other instance, and in this case, you need to make a finding of intent. You need to make a finding, an inference regarding intent, so a finding of intent. But then you also need to figure out what the credit limits were. Now, in terms of conduct, I think we kind of make an assumption that past behavior is somehow indicative of what future conduct may be. In the case of credit cards, just because you know the limits on, say, 5 out of 10 credit cards, they say nothing about the other limits on the other credit cards. They're independent entities, but they're not interrelated in the same way we think of behavior.
Yeah, but based on the profit-sharing arrangement that Mr. Mai had with some of his Chicago accomplices, which required them to charge a total of $12,000 before they could share in all the profits, and based on the evidence from persons B and C in Ohio that they purchased cards from Mr. Mai based on the understanding that they were to use the cards right up to their limits, why couldn't Judge Guzman infer that Mr. Mai intended that each card be used as much as possibly could be up to its limit?
Well, even assuming, for the sake of argument, that the district court was correct that Mr. Mai intended to use the cards to their limits, you still need to have a reasonable estimate of what that is. And that's essentially what we're challenging here, is that averaging the limits doesn't give you something based on, because the limits that we do know about.
It's possible that it's lower.
It's possible that it's lower. It's possible that it's higher. And so it's that calculation that we feel is speculative.
Yeah, by the way, is there any evidence that Mr. Mai imposed his own limit on how much an individual credit card would be used?
I don't think
to your knowledge.
To my knowledge, there's nothing in the record that suggests that Mr. Mai put a limit on the amount of loss.
Well, he just wanted to, I assume, push it to the max, didn't he?
Well, I think that's the assumption.
Because he didn't really know what the max was, probably.
Well, that's one of the assumptions that the district court makes, and I think that it, there is some evidence to reflect, I think, persons B and C. There's some evidence to say that they was their understanding. What I think the record reflects, however, was that a loss consistent with the prior, with the actual loss. That if you look at the record, only one of the credit cards was actually used to its limit. Two of the credit cards close to their limits, but this is conduct that took place over the course of a year. He was pretty much supervised by the government the entire time. So I think that it's a question as to whether or not, I mean, Mr. Mai intended to max out the credit cards.
You say supervised by the government, you mean monitored?
Monitored, right. So it's basically, we feel that the method, that there's two basically approved methods here. One is the average actual loss. The other one is the total known credit cards. But I think it's important to note that in those cases where the total credit limits are used, that those cases all reflect an understanding that the defendant himself knew what the credit limits were. And that even more importantly, the court was able to figure out what those credit limits were. And that there was no speculation as to how much fraud was possible. Again, in this case, didn't know the credit limits, didn't know the behavior. So you needed to draw an inference as to what Mr. May would have done had he not been caught. You also needed to draw an inference as to what those credit limits were. And we feel it's the stacking of an inference upon an inference that makes the $1.9 million intended loss calculation unreasonable and speculative. As to the second matter, the district court's finding that Mr. May intended to use the cards to their limit, we think the record supports the supports a finding that Mr. May intended a loss consistent with his prior with the actual loss caused. And so we would ask this court to remand for resentencing based on the average purchases as opposed to total credit limits.
Okay, thank you. Mr. X.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Charles X, and I represent the government in this appeal. The first issue that the court needs to address is what was Mr. May's intent. I think that's the first thing that you need to determine before you can determine then what was the reasonable methodology. And Judge Guzman's findings of fact not only were not clearly erroneous, but actually were very well supported throughout the record. Judge Rovner, I think, has already pointed out some of the major findings of fact that Judge Guzman found in order to show that the defendant's intent was to charge these cars to the absolute maximum. One of the things that counsel points out was that there were only a few of the cards that were actually charged to the limit. Well, there were 219 total cards that were part of this whole conspiracy that the government had evidence were being used as part of the conspiracy. However, only 69 of those 219 cards were actually seized so that we would have an opportunity to find out what the actual credit limits were and to what extent the cards were used.
Well, maybe I'm confused about something. But why was information regarding the credit limit unavailable for so many cards when the government appears to have had the card numbers? In other words, why couldn't the banks provide that information?
Well, one of the problems was basically there were three phases of this conspiracy, which are reflected in our charts A, B, and C. The one of the things that kind of make that that inquiry difficult was in the second phase, in the Ohio part of the conspiracy, there were essentially 160 cards that the co-conspirators in Ohio purchased from Mr. May with the intention and understanding that they were buying it with the understanding that the cards would be used to the limit, and in fact, on numerous occasions, they actually took the cards to gambling casinos to cash them out at the cash credit limits. The problem with being able to determine all of those in Ohio in particular were we only recovered 23 of the 160 cards. So because that left in the whole conspiracy 150 total cards we never actually were able to find. We know that Mr. May used those cards because of the evidence in the case of co-conspirators confessing how many cards they purchased for how much to what extent they used the cars.
Oh, in other words, you didn't have the cars.
We never had physical possession. Out of the 219 cars, there was 150 that we never had physical possession.
Now, did you have the numbers for those?
No, we did not have the numbers nor the possession of the cars, which was the essential problem for why we can't come to the court and say, here were all the credit limits and here's to the extent. I mean, I'm not going to make a representation about 150 cards that we don't know the number for. I mean, it's possible that those 150 cards were used to the credit limits. It's possible that they were only used partially. But I don't think that's what drives the question of intent here. It's not whether they, in fact, were able to accomplish what they intended. It's what they, had they been able to, is what they would have done. The record is replete with evidence of some of the reasons why cards don't go to the credit limit. One of those is the security measures of the credit card companies themselves. One thing that was very telling as part of the record is Mr. May was recorded in an undercover conversation where he said, you know, today you have to use these skimmers. These are these electronic mechanisms that when a waiter or a cashier at what was used as part of this scheme, the Chinese restaurants, would take your card and skim it. That is really the way that the professionals in this industry are stealing the numbers and making the cards work. Well, it used to be not too long ago, as Mr. May was pointing out to his co-conspirator, that all you had to do was copy the number and you could make a counterfeit card just based on the number and you'd be able to beat the system. Now you can't do that anymore. Now you actually have to have the electronic information on the card in order to get around the security systems of the credit card companies. But even that does not always make it a perfect world for the credit card thief, because the credit card limits themselves, when the numbers are stolen, are often already close to a credit limit, and there were other things that showed that there were sometimes imperfections in the cards. When they were arrested in this computer store, they were taking out cards. One might have been rejected. The next one they would come up with, they would use it until they were able to get all the charges that they were attempting to make. For instance, in that last part of the conspiracy, when the Secret Service brought down the investigation and arrested them. I'd like to just briefly turn in my remaining moments to the question of methodology. I think that this court's decision in Scott and in the case of Chernoff, which it cited in Scott, really makes it clear that the methodology that the government propounded and which Judge Guzman adopted was very proper. The only difference between Scott in this case was there were over 200 cards which were obtained blank, and the court was able, from two cards that were actually used, to impute what the intended loss was to the other 200 cards. Well, what we're doing here is we had 69 cards that we seized, 47 of which we were able to ascertain what the credit limit was. Because of the credit card companies not responding to the difference from between the 47 and the 69, the additional 20 cards, we just weren't able, the Secret Service wasn't able to get that information. But still, based on 47 out of 216, that was essentially a little over 20%, which I think falls well within what this court has accepted as a reasonable estimate, which the guidelines clearly only require a reasonable attempt. It doesn't have to be a perfect estimate of what the loss was.
I may have missed a beat, but are you saying that some of the credit companies would not cooperate with the Secret Service?
I'm not saying that they didn't want to cooperate, but it's an unfortunate reality that you could get a lecture from the United States Secret Service on how at times credit card companies, to them it's more of a bother to go after the people that rip them off than just let it lie and let business as usual. So unfortunately, the Secret Service is not always able to get 100% of the victim figures. You know, I would submit, Your Honor, that there were far more actual damages in this case, but obviously the government only went as far as it could prove up by preponderance of the evidence. My guess, and it's only a guess, and it's not part of this court's record, but I would suggest that the actual losses, and especially in light of the fact that there were 150 cards that we never actually determine the numbers of, that this was far in excess of $2 million. But the reasonable estimate that Judge Guzman, based on the facts and the record, was clearly able to take a reasonable estimate of what the projected credit limits would be, and we tried to take as conservative a methodology by taking each of the three categories and taking an average of that, which actually comes up with a smaller average and a more conservative average figure than if we had just taken all 219, or rather all 47, and just taken one broad average. So we tried to always give the benefit of the doubt to Mr. May, and even taking that benefit of the doubt to him, I don't think there's anything in the case law that would create an arbitrary distinction that you must use just the actual loss itself, when in this case that would be contrary to the record and the findings of fact by Judge Guzman, where he was well-founded in determining that this defendant intended to basically, in his words, to gouge his victims for every penny he could with every card that he had in every way that he knew. If there are no further questions, I would respectfully request that this court affirm the defendant's sentence in all respects.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Rivas?
Just to briefly address some of the remarks counsel made regarding the categories of the cards, using the categories does and the methodology they use results in a slightly lower figure. If you took the average of all the cards, it'd be slightly higher, but it wouldn't affect the overall sentencing range. It doesn't get you out of the category, so it doesn't, in actuality, accrue any benefit to Mr. May. I guess, just like to say, Mr. May, highlight the fact that Mr. May had no knowledge of the limits on the cards, and that without that knowledge, I think it's questionable he could form the intent to use the cards to their limits. And that even if this court upholds the district court's finding that he intended to use the cards to their limits, there's no way to make a reasonable estimate given the evidence presented on the credit cards. The 69 credit cards say nothing about the remainder of the limits on the cards. And so without that information, I think you need to go back to the average actual loss or the total of the known credit limits. The case in Scott, I think, highlights that, is that you're drawing an inference relating conduct. You're not drawing an inference relating the average amounts on the cards. And that because we can't know, because the cards that we do know about say nothing about the cards that we have no information about. There's no relationship between them. I think that makes the resulting sentence somewhat speculative. And on a final note, it's the government's burden to prove by preponderance of the evidence the amount of loss. The amount of loss on the cards, the amount of the credit cards. Because we can't make any reasonable inference from the amounts that we do know relating to the amounts on the credit cards we have no information about, I would say that they didn't carry the burden to show by preponderance of the evidence the amount of loss or even credit limits on those cards. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Priebus. I know you're a law student. We appreciate your working on this assignment, and Ms. Paul, we appreciate your supervision and the service to court. Thanks very much. The case will be taken under advisement. That will end the arguments for the day. The court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning. Might not be disappointing, my clerk.